On today's Garnet Community Podcast, I'm delighted to be joined by Zygmunt Shahzad, who's at the University of Glasgow. And we're talking about a paper just published in Nature Communications, the title of which is Cryptic Variation in RNA-Directed DNA Methylation Controls Lateral Root Development When Auxin Signaling is Perturbed. So Nature Communications, it's a relatively small paper, but believe me, when you look under the hood, there's a lot of information in here. So there's a huge amount of data about testing loads of accessions, a lot of sequencing, a lot of genetic analysis. So it's really quite an impressive manuscript. So thanks very much, Zygmunt, for joining us today. And it would be great if you could give us an overview of what you found, please.
Yeah, thank you, Geraint. This work started in Antman lab on a BBSRC-funded project. Mm-hmm. And in this paper, we describe a mechanism that underpins developmental robustness in plant roots. The study has been performed in the model plant species, Arabidopsis thaliana. Mm-hmm. And in fact, in plants, we knew for a long time that development of roots is quite flexible. And the environment in which plants grow can heavily influence the architecture of plant root systems. Mm-hmm. But we are also aware of the fact that biological systems are quite robust, mm-hmm. and they show resistance to genetic or environmental perturbations. A very simple example of this can be genetic redundancy, where due to gene duplication, when you knock out a gene, you don't see a phenotype because the second copy of the gene can compensate for the loss of the first one. The developmental plasticity of root systems has been quite intensively studied, but the mechanisms underpinning developmental robustness have remained very much unclear.
Absolutely. So we know a lot about, in this case, we talk about lateral root development. So we know that auxin controls lateral root development, and there's been a lot of analysis of that. But in this paper, you add a little bit of detail to that level of control.
Yeah, this study basically started with the observation that Arabidopsis reference accession, that is COL0, mm-hmm. showed a mild but significant decrease in the formation of lateral roots when the plants were grown under potassium-deficient conditions.
Okay.
So I'm a natural variation freak, so I investigated natural variation of this response within the Arabidopsis species, and it was quite interesting to find out that there is a large variation for this response. Some genotypes are extremely plastic, they hardly produce any lateral roots when grown under potassium-deficient conditions, and there are other genotypes which are completely robust. They don't respond to this the limitation of this nutrient. Mm-hmm. So we thought this provides us the handle to identify the mechanisms that we describe in this paper and which help the plants to set this balance between plasticity and robustness. And in fact, setting this balance correctly is very important for plants and, other organisms as well, because this allows them to adapt to the dynamic environments and while maintaining essential functions.
Absolutely. So this is the key finding, and I found it very interesting looking at the abstract initially that, we know a lot about the auxin response, as you said, to lateral roots. But really, you dig even deeper than that. So you show when you strip away the auxin response, there's a secondary response which plays a role in this control. So the focus of the paper is this CLASI gene. So can you say a little bit about that, how you identified it, and what it does?
We were exploring the natural variation of lateral root formation response to potassium deficiency. We performed these typical genome-wide dissociation mapping studies where we correlate the phenotypes with the genotypic variation. Mm-hmm. And through that analysis, one of the associations was very close to the CLASI1 gene. It was around 15 kbs away from the association. Mm-hmm. So we tested different mutants, mutants for the genes which were underlying this association. Mm-hmm. And only the mutant of CLASI1 gave us a phenotype.
Okay.
Others didn't have any phenotype. So then we were interested in understanding the genetic variation in CLASI1 and mm-hmm. how it acts on lateral root development. And we were also interested in understanding how CLASI1, in fact, acts on lateral root development under potassium-deficient conditions because, the CLASI1 mutants don't have a phenotype under control conditions.
Okay.
So it was specifically under potassium-deficient conditions that we could see the role of CLASI1. Hmm.
And what is the CLASI1 gene? What does it do?
So CLASI1 is, in fact, required for biogenesis of small RNAs. which are used to methylate cytosine nucleotides in DNA. Okay. I mean, mainly the transposable elements. I mean, obviously, one function of this chemical modification of DNA is to silence these transposable elements so they do not move around in the genome. But we know that these transposable elements have been inserted in the euchromatin as well, I mean, nearby the genes.
Okay.
So once this happens, I mean, their methylation status can influence the expression of the neighboring genes. So this is quite well established in the field now. We started investigating different published methylomes for different components of RNA-directed DNA methylation pathway.
Okay.
So when I looked into the, I mean, databases published, for different mutants of this pathway, it was quite interesting to find out that one gene that was, I mean, consistently shown to be methylated by this pathway was IAA27.
Okay.
And, I mean, I confirmed that under my own conditions that, I mean, if this is the case, because, you know, I mean, methylation can be dynamic as well. So
absolutely.
In certain conditions you see it, but in other conditions you don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was already shown in, I mean, several, like three or four studies that RNA-directed DNA methylation pathway methylates the several transposable elements, which are present in the putative promoter of the IA27.
And you showed that with a natural variation within the CLASI gene, you see this variation within the IA27 promoter as well, methylation.
Yeah, this is where it is a bit more tricky. We identified kind of bad and good alleles of CLASI1 in terms of the lateral root development.
Okay.
So what we found in the CLASI1 mutant in Colombia background, in the CLASI1 mutant, there is no methylation of IA27 promoter, and it's more expressed in the CLASI1 mutants. From the natural variation analysis, we found kind of inactive alleles of CLASI1 and the alleles which are active in terms of the lateral root development. And when we looked into the methylation patterns between these two groups, I mean, genotypic groups, it was consistent that IA27 promoter was heavily methylated in the accessions which are carrying active CLASI1 allele.
Okay.
And the accessions which carry inactive kind of CLASI1 allele, in that group, I mean, IA27 promoter methylation was very low.
Okay.
But obviously, this was highly variable between the accessions because there could be other factors influencing the
methylation.
But when you average, I mean, and when you make the comparison between two groups, you consistently see a highly significant difference in terms of the methylation levels between the two groups.
Yeah, absolutely. We know that natural variation studies, they're hardly binary studies, right? So it's not one or the other. So, all right, so just as a final question, so we have now the link between this CLASI function to involved in the methylation of the IA27. So how then did you link that to the rest of the auxin response?
Yeah, so this is an interesting question. So, I mean, we know that IAAs, they are the negative regulators of auxin signaling.
Mm-hmm.
In the presence of auxin, they are degraded through the T1, the auxin receptor pathway.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the degradation of IAA proteins is very critical during this process.
Mm-hmm.
So here we found that there is another negative kind of break. It is coming from the transcriptional control. CLASI1 represses IA27.
Mm-hmm.
Always independent of the potassium availability. So you have two negative regulations going on, double negative regulation is there. One is at the protein level and the other one is at the transcriptional level.
Mm-hmm.
So once there is a problem in the protein degradation pathway, I mean, we tested it, I mean, that potassium deficiency leads to higher accumulation of IA27 proteins in the roots.
Yep, okay.
And in the T1 mutant, I mean, this is constitutively high. So the T1 mutant produces less lateral roots, and under potassium deficient conditions, we also have less lateral roots.
I see.
So basically, there is a problem in the protein degradation pathway under potassium deficient conditions. So basically, you shut off the auxin signaling. In this scenario, the predominant factor that determines the levels of the IA27 in plants becomes the transcription. In this case, you can unveil the role of CLASI1. Because, I mean, if you produce more transcripts or less transcripts, then you will have a different level of protein in the CLASI1 mutant or the wild-type plants.
Hey,
and depending upon that, there is a phenotype for the lateral root development.
Exactly. So under normal conditions, the lateral root numbers are controlled through this, the degradation of the I-27. If there's less auxin due to less potassium, then this is where the class E effect comes in. So you remove class E, then you get even less lateral roots again.
Absolutely.
And this is the whole idea about the robustness.
This is the whole idea of robustness, and I mean a kind of backup. We propose that this is a kind of, DNA methylation is a backup for the protein degradation.
Okay, that's great. Thanks very much, Zeigman, for talking to us today. And I urge people to go and check out this paper. There's a lot of information in there. It's a very interesting manuscript.
Thank you, Garen. Thank you. It was a pleasure to talking to you.